Sometimes I get that before church. Sometimes Craig gets it before church. Sometimes Brian gets it before church. Sometimes nobody gets it before church. Today was nobody's turn. As we go through the book of Exodus, we'll come to specific cases that are called case law about how specifically some of these things are applied, some of the Ten Commandments are applied. And I've tried to avoid using them as examples because we'll get to them pretty soon. And there are plenty of other examples in the world that I shouldn't have to do that specifically. But this morning, some of the examples that I'm going to give you of different things that we'll talk about are going to come from the construction industry. And there's two reasons for that. One is because I've been in construction for 45 to 50 years. And so I've seen a lot of underhanded stealing or some things that we might not even call stealing go on. I'm familiar with that. I can give you some real life examples of that. The other thing is that I want us to see how in any field, you may not be in the construction field, but you may be in some other field, but there are dozens of ways that these things take place no matter what field you're in. That's just the way it is. Even in our home, these things happen. And so I want us to see the kind of the widespread of it. Have you ever heard of the phrase, you can't legislate morality? That's a saying that most of us have heard. Somebody help me out here. What does that mean? When somebody says, well, you can't legislate morality, what do they mean?
People have it inside them, but they don't have it.
People have it. Say that last part again.
Give
them something inside them. Okay? That's a good explanation. All right? Most of the time, what I have heard that, and I think what a lot of people hear when they say that statement is they hear things like, you want prayer in school. Well, you can't legislate morality. You want this and that. You know, you're trying to mix religion and the secular world. And so they come out with this statement, you can't legislate morality. I heard R.C. Sproul on a video years ago make this statement. He talked about that phrase, you can't legislate morality. And his statement was this, you don't legislate anything but morality. And I thought of that, and I want you to just think for a minute about that. The speed limit. Is there a law, is there legislation governing the speed limit? Of course, there is. Is that a moral legislation? Yes, it is. Because it is immoral for someone to drive like an idiot down the road endangering everyone else's life. That is immoral. And so the state and the government, as bad as I hate the government, but the government legislates morality in that instance. There are laws against stealing. It's immoral to steal. There are laws against killing. It's immoral to kill. There are antitrust laws against monopolies and such and such, and I've already told you more than I know about that. But at the base of them, there is a moral issue that is being addressed. So I think his statement is right. We don't legislate anything but morality. The age that we are living in is what I call the age of entitlement. There are people everywhere who are wanting something. And this age of entitlement in our society and in our government breeds a new generation of people who are angry, who are selfish, who are ignorant about what life is all about. And they are backed by politicians who will promised them all of this loot in exchange for their votes. It's an exchange of loot, but it comes at a cost, and that cost is freedom. The more you depend upon the government, the more the government has its hand upon you. You are the slave of who gives you things. And those things come at the expense of somebody else. Nothing is free. Most of the violations of this commandment, thou shalt not steal, that I want to talk about this morning, are much more subtle than these in-your-face things that we see on the news and the Congress and all this kind of stuff. It's much more subtle than that. It's often misidentified. Sometimes we call someone lazy when in reality they're a thief. And so on. And the violations of this commandment are so common. They are so common and so subtle that we have to give each other grace because we violate it. If nothing else, in spirit. Let me give you an example of this. Suppose that Susan's first cousin, Randy New, owns a store across the street. And we know them well. She grew up with him. Let's suppose I go over there, and it's the dead of winter, and it's 15 or 20 degrees outside, and I go over there, and I'm fixing to go in and open the door, and I see this older lady with a walker coming behind me, and she's, you know, far from here to the back of the room behind me, but I'm going to wait on her to open the door for her. That's nice, isn't it? Okay, so I stand there with the door open while she teeter-totters 20 or 30 foot across the parking lot to come in. And Randy's standing in there at the counter. It's 20 degrees outside. I got the door open and the heat is going out. Well, he's counting the dollars that's going out the door. I'm costing him money by my generous spirit. What's he going to do? Nothing. Nothing. He's going to think to himself, I wish you'd shut the door. Well, she got a little closer before you open the door. But he's not going to say anything. It's grace. He's being gracious to my thoughtlessness. Suppose I come up there and every day I've been working, I've got mud on my dirt on my britches and stuff, and I come in, and before I go in, every day that I'm there, I think I need to kind of dust myself off a little bit. So I open the door. I stand there with the door open, resting against my rear, and I'm dusting myself off. It takes me a minute or two, and all the time I'm sitting there with the door open, and the heat's going out. Or in the summertime, the air conditioning is going out. I do that day after day after day. What's Randy going to do? Probably nothing. Probably nothing. But he's going to be getting a little more frustrated at my carelessness all the time, don't you think? I would. What if I come up there and every day I come, I open the door and I get the trash can and prop the door open and just go on in and do my stuff? I've crossed the line probably, haven't I? Somewhere in there, Randy's going to say, John, keep the door shut. You're costing me money. You're stealing my heat. Now, those are pretty silly examples in a way, but they make a point that sometimes we do things that subtly, very subtly cost our neighbor, cost our friend, cost our children, cost our parents, cost somebody something. But it's a small thing, and it's so common that we just graciously overlook it. Do we do that? We do. So a lot of these things I'm going to talk about fall into that category. But in spirit, they still cost. So let's look at the first one as this. The prohibition against stealing implies the legitimacy of private ownership. If there is something I can steal from you, then the implications are there's something you own, something that's yours. Private property, the idea of private property, something that is mine, has its roots in the book of Genesis in the Garden of Eden before the fall, where God told Adam and Eve to take dominion over the earth. And eventually, that concept spread out as the population grew to be, I take dominion over what is mine. In the Garden of Eden, there were two people. If you're an introvert like me, I think I would have liked that. The whole earth is mine. But then came the fall. And with the fall, this idea of taking dominion over the earth is perverted. It's become perverted. And I'll give you the two extremes. It's perverted in one way where people take dominion forcibly over things that are not theirs. And that's stealing. You see, in the Garden of Eden, when God gave Adam and Eve the mandate to take dominion over the earth, it was their calling from God. God gave them this calling. And God put it in their nature to do such a thing. But the fall twisted that up. Some people try to take more than is theirs, and there are others who abdicate their responsibility to take dominion to somebody else. That may be a father who is reckless and lazy and complacent, and full of apathy in his home or in his work. But just because we do not take dominion does not mean that dominion just evaporates. It's just passed over to someone else. Fathers who do not fulfill their responsibility as a father, who takes up the slack? The mother or the government or his parents or somebody. It doesn't just disappear. Someone has to do it. And that someone has experienced theft. Being robbed of their time, being robbed of their money, being robbed of their own resources, because they've got to do something for someone else who would not do it. Usually, someone will always bring this up. Doesn't the New Testament talk about the early church, that the church ought to have all things common and kind of a communal type system? And they'll always point you to the book of Acts, chapter 4, 32 through 5, 11, where the scriptures talk about the church bringing their stuff, selling it all, and giving it to a common pool to help those that had need. The church was in a situation where they were being persecuted, and the idea is that that's the way things ought to be. But the text actually teaches just the opposite. Now to walk you through this a little bit and let you see this. You know the story, Ananias and Sapphira. Ananias and Sapphira were members of the early church there, and they came and brought some money to the church. And Peter asked Ananias, you know, what is this you've done? You've lied, not to me, but to God. And you remember what happened to Ananias? He dropped dead. He dropped dead. And people look at that and they say, well, the issue was that he didn't give it all. He didn't give everything he's supposed to give. That's not the issue. Because you see that in Peter's answer. And this is what I want to get with you on. Peter says, when it was your own, when it was yours, before this sale, was it not your own? What's the implications there? You do with it whatever you want. It belonged to you. You didn't have to do this. And then he said, and after it was sold, was it still not in your control? You could sell it. You did sell it. But you still had the ownership of the money. It was still yours. You still had the right to do with the proceeds whatever you want. So what was wrong? What was wrong, and I'm going to use a number, was they sold the land for $10,000. But they come to the church and say, we sold it for $5,000. We're giving everything we got. We sold it for this, and we're giving all of our possessions to the church to try to make themselves look good. They didn't have to do that. Peter says, why is it that you have lied? The issue is not giving. The issue was lying. But in the process of that exchange, Peter two times tells them, you have right to the property. You have personal and private property, ownership of it, that is yours. Likewise, we do too. What are some things that can be stolen? You see, I've got four categories: physical property, time, non-physical things such as love, affection, loyalty, trust, reputation, joy, peace, etc., and then other things. As I went through here putting things under each category, there's so much overlap that I finally just kind of gave up and just started putting them on there. So you may see some subheadings there that you think ought to belong in another place, and that's fine. But I'm going to run through them very quickly to give you examples of way things can be stolen, where things that someone can break the letter of the law or the spirit of the law or both. All right, first one, liability insurance on automobiles. I'm trying to pick things that aren't just you took my dog or you took my truck or those kind of things that are obvious. Liability insurance on autos. In the state of Arkansas, and I assume it's this way in all 50 states, there's a law that if you have a vehicle, you have to carry liability insurance. Why is that? It's legislating morality. It's because if I've got a truck or a vehicle, and I don't have any insurance on it, and I'm driving down the road, and it's by my own fault of carelessness or whatever happens, or my brakes go out or whatever, I have a wreck, and I hit your vehicle and damaged your vehicle, you have suffered loss at my hand, even though it was an accident. And I say, gosh, you know, Tim, it's an accident. I'm sure sorry. Does that make your car well? No. Does it recover your loss? No. And so the law fixes that by saying, I'm required to at least have liability insurance to fix your vehicle. It does nothing for mine. If I don't want coverage on my vehicle, I don't have to have it. But I have to have it to protect you from my driving skills. Second, hobos. I guess hobos are kind of out of style, aren't they? Don't call it hobos anymore. Stealing the fare. If you're riding a bus in the town or whatever and you manage to get on without the driver seeing you, I don't know how that works. I've never done that. But if you do something like that without paying, then that's theft. An uncontrolled burn. If I'm burning my yard off and the fire gets out and it burns my neighbor's yard, or it burns his garden, or it burns his storage building, or whatever it is. Again, it was an accident, but again, it's still loss. It's still a loss to him that I am liable for. And if I do nothing to fix it, then I have stolen from him. Authorized use of company property. Let me give you a couple of examples of this. 10 or 12 years ago, I was building a house and hired this young guy to work with me, and he was 16 or 17 years old. And every time I hire somebody to work with me, here's the agreement or at least part of it. You provide your nail bag, a hammer, a tape measure, and usually if they have a little bit of experience, a speed square. You know what a speed square is. Those things you provide for yourself. They belong to you, but you use them on the job. And this young guy didn't he didn't have any money, and he didn't hardly know what a speed square was, and he couldn't read a tape measure. And so I said, I'll let you use my stuff till you can get your own. So that's what we did. After a couple of weeks, one morning we was starting to work, and I said, you know, you come work with me or you do this. And he said, give me a measurement on this. Well, he didn't have his tape. I said, well, where's your tape? He said, I left it at home. I said, what's the tape doing at home? He said he carried his stuff home to work on something around the house. I don't know how you would feel about that, but I didn't think that's right. I didn't let him borrow my tools to carry home and do his projects. And I told him so. I said, these are my tools. When you leave every day, you leave them here. They're my tools. You've carried them home, now you've left them home, and I've got to come up with some other tools for you. So, that's what we did. Give you another illustration. Back when I was, the summer before Susan and I got married, in the summer of 1979, my dad was a build houses around Heber Springs for a while, and he spent 5 or 10 years building water treatment plants and sewage treatment plants around the state for another company. And in the summers that when I was in college and after high school, I worked with him during the summer on those jobs. And in 1979, I was 21 years old. I was fixed to get married that fall. And we were working in Hope, Arkansas. They're building a sewage treatment plant there. And on one side of town was part of this sewage treatment plant complex. And the other side of town was the main part of it. Well, that summer, I was working. My dad was the superintendent over the whole job. He was kind of overseeing one side, and I was overseeing the other side. And I had about 15 or 20 guys that were supposed to be there every day to work that I kept busy, and we were working on this project. Well, there was about 5 or 6 of these guys that were worthless. Now, I'm 21 years old. And these guys, they probably were my age. Some of them may have been older. I doubt if they were much younger. But they would, I drove a company truck. The job site was like 10 acres. And the tool room was over here. And we're building some drying beds over here. And it's 200 yards away. Now, if you need a sledgehammer, to walk 200 yards is time-consuming, nothing else. So the truck I drove was used on the job site to doodle tools and material around. Well, these guys would get in the truck, and it was just dirt field, you know, just as flat as out back here. And they would, you know, slide around and do this and that and take a sledgehammer and it didn't bother them if they broke the handle out of it. My dad had a good way to fix that. As soon as the sledgehammer handle got broke, he took it out and he welded about 1.5 inch piece of pipe on that sledgehammer head. He didn't break those. They're also very unforgiving as far as the jar. Just when you hit the stake just right, it still hurt. If you miss and hit the handle, it really hurt. But you didn't break the handles out. And it wasn't long on the job site till every sledgehammer had a steel handle in it. It just the way it was. Well, these guys, they didn't care if they tore up something. You know, they didn't care if they worked. They were just there waiting for Friday and their check. Were they stealing? Do you know what all of they were stealing? They were stealing my time. When I should have been doing something else, I was having to babysit these guys. They were stealing sledgehammer handles. They were stealing my dad's time fixing sledgehammer handles. They were stealing the wear and tear on this truck that they were desperately trying to tear up. They're stealing all of this stuff. And that fall, when Susan and I got married, we went to college. For some reason, we thought we was going to go to college. When we went to school, I told my dad, I said, you need to fire these guys. I didn't have the authority to fire them. I'd already talked to him about them. He said, oh, they're okay. He said, you ain't going to find anybody any different or any better, you know, to work. I went to school. Me and Susan were married about 2 weeks. I had to be talking to him. I said, well, how's this going? He said, well, I fired these five guys. And I told you. I said, I told you so. You know, when he had to be there with them every day, he didn't have much sympathy or much mercy with them. Stealing. Improper use of company property. Most of y'all don't work on construction sites. But in your workplace, I would venture to say, if you gave it 5 minutes of thought, you could make a list of ways employees steal from the company. It may be looked upon as being okay, but it's doing things. It's not doing things. It's using things. It's not using things that really do not belong to you. Time. What about time? Distractions on the job site. This was a pet peeve of mine. Daniel can probably tell you this when I was working. On my job site, you never had a radio going. Never. My idea was, I'm not going to compete with the radio for you to hear me. I'm not going to do it. No competition there. I'm not doing it. If I were still working, I would even have a worse pet peeve nowadays with phones. With phones. So how does that work? You know, I would have a rule. If I see you on your phone and it's not an emergency, you're either going to leave your phone at home or in the car, or we're probably fixed part ways. I'm not doing it. I'm not paying you to talk on the phone. What if I go to the lumber company to get something and I forget what I had? And it would be awful handy. I mean, used to, I'd had to went back to the job. But now I can call you on your cell phone, which I just told you, stay off of. So it looks like I've got a little double standard here, doesn't it? Okay? That kind of stuff needs to be up front with. Okay, I'll pay you 50 cents an hour more or something. Your wage is figured in. I've got use of your phone if I need it. It'll be very minimal, but if I need to call you somewhere, I can. But for you to call Aunt Sue or your girlfriend or your boyfriend, no. So all those things can be ironed out up front. Habitually disrespectful of other people's time. Worship practice on Sunday mornings. You know what time our worship practice is? 8:45. You know what time I get here?
9.
Not very often. 8:50, 8:55. 5 or 10 minutes late every Sunday. You know what time everybody else gets here? Same time I do. You know why? Because they know I ain't going to be there. All right? Now, when Granny was living with us, it took us a longer time to get ready to go and get her in the car and get her up here, that kind of stuff. And just like we never could start early enough to get there. And I've got a bad habit of trying to squeeze in one more little thing I can do before I leave. May not be 2 minutes worth, but it causes me to be late. You know what time we start church? Supposed to be 10:30. People don't get here at 10:30. That's my excuse. All right, we get here at 10:35, at 10:40. Why is that? Is that because John doesn't start at 10:30? It's part of it. The more we do that, the more, and we have grace for each other, don't we? You know, y'all don't gripe at me for not starting on time. If we start at 11, sooner or later, I'd start hearing something. But you give me grace for 5 minutes, week after week after week. I give you grace for 5 minutes, week after week after week. But what if I tell John, I need to meet with you this week, and we set a time to meet at 10 o'clock. We're going to meet here at the church. And John's busy. John's got stuff he does every day all morning long. But that morning, he stops what he's doing at 9:30 or so, comes up here to meet me at 10. If I don't get here till 10:30, I may be wrong, but I suspect John's made a little bit aggravated. I didn't call him. I didn't do anything. I'm just late. I'm costing him his time. I don't have a right to steal his time that way. Now, we're gracious to each other, but nevertheless, I'm costing him something. Misuse of another person's generosity. You won't believe this, but across Cleburne County, in the summertime, churches have homecomings. I don't know if you know what a homecoming is, but it's a yearly event where a church, they call it homecoming, and they have a dinner on the grounds, and they have music and singing in the afternoon, those kind of things. Kind of a long-standing tradition. It's kind of phasing out, actually, has been. But there are people who every summer, used to, at least they would look through the paper, it's not much of a paper anymore, and see where the homecomings were. And they would go and visit each homecoming for what reason? A free meal. A free meal. That's the only reason they were there, for a free meal. Tools. I made this statement once before years ago. I heard a saying a long time ago, never loan out tools that you make your living with. I got lots of tools. I kind of got a lot of people trained, I guess, don't be asking John for his tools. But my dad used to be so generous as he used to call it, would think himself generous. I thought he was naive, I guess, to think he was going to get these things back, actually. And I've seen him so aggravated that this one guy that lived close to him, because he had, you know, my dad was looking for a tool. He looks for it for 30 minutes, and all of a sudden he remembers, I loaned it to old Joe, you know, 6 months ago. Joe, he spends his money on jet skis and four-wheelers and boats. My dad spends his money on tools. So when old Joe needs some tools, he ain't got them. He got a boat, but ain't got any tools. Let's move on. Non-physical things. A spouse's affections. You can steal another man's wife's affections. Or a woman can steal another woman's husband's affections. We even use terms like this. He stole their spouse. Don't we use those terms? We label it as theft. The heart of children from their parents. A kid's peers can steal your child's heart away from your home and your values. They can be taken away by ungodly peers. unjustly aligning, maligning another person, either privately or in public, slandering someone, saying something, telling something false about someone, or taking a grain of truth and swelling it up until and presenting it in such a way that it is obviously not right. Here's something sad that I have learned. People, for whatever reason, seem to be eager to believe something bad about someone that they ordinarily wouldn't believe. Most of you know a little bit about mine and Susan's past history with some of our relatives. There's been a lady who would tell stuff about me and Susan that was just simply not true. And there's one, I heard this one lady said, "I just can't believe John and Susan would do such a thing." Then why do you? Why do you believe it? Why would you believe someone you've known for 2 weeks against someone you've known for 20 years? Why not go and ask them? Come and ask me, is this true? Rather than just taking someone's word. But it's part of our fallen nature. We, for some ungodly reason, and it is ungodly, we delight in hearing something juicy and wrong about someone. Other things. Usury. Usury or interest. Is it wrong to charge someone interest? I knew a guy, his name was, I better not tell his name. But he got like everybody else, he borrowed money to build a house or to buy a house, and so he's living in this house, and all of a sudden he gets this wild hair that to be interested in the Old Testament law. So he devours the Old Testament law, and he comes across in there where you're not supposed to charge interest or usury from another brother. So he goes to the bank, and he tells the bank, "I'll pay you the interest, but I'm not paying you. I'll pay the principal, but I'm not paying you the interest. It's against God's law." The bank didn't agree with him, you can imagine. He ended up in all kinds of trouble with a lot of other things that he misapplied from the New Testament law. I'll tell you what I have seen. I'm going to ask you, is this wrong? Some of these guys, like I told you, I work with at Hope. I work with some more just like them at Wynn on another job. It was my dad's. And these guys get their paycheck on Friday. By Monday, most of them are broke. They spend all their money on wine and women. And by Monday, if they were able to come to work, you know, they weren't much account on Monday. But by the end of the week, they didn't have money to buy their lunch. So what do? Well, occasionally, one of them didn't blow all his money. He had some money. And so this guy goes to him and says, "Hey, let me borrow $5. It may be on Tuesday or Wednesday. Let me borrow $5 to Friday to buy lunch." And on Friday, he says, "Okay, but on Friday, you pay me 10. He borrows $5 on Tuesday, pays back 10 on Friday. I don't know what percent interest that is, but it's pretty high. Don't you think? Is there anything wrong with that? Not necessarily. Is he holding a gun to the guy's back to make him give him his $10 Friday? He might have to. I don't know. But if there's an agreement there, I'm not sure there's anything wrong with that. It's stupid, but maybe not necessarily wrong. Would I do it? No. I would either give him the $5, or I'd just say, "You can pay me back $5, but I'm probably not going to." I would just say no. Before I gave him, said, "You got to pay me back 10, I'd just say, I ain't gonna loan you the money. When is that wrong? Really wrong? It's wrong if this guy needs $5 to go buy his little baby some diapers or maybe some baby food or something like that. But because he has squandered everything away, and now he can't feed himself. You know, there's a lot of people living in that kind of situation. Let me not do exactly that. But there are credit cards. You can get a credit card, and if you pay it off every month, you don't pay any interest. You can get a credit card that's low interest, 5 or 6% or whatever it may be. And if you don't pay it off at a certain period of time, it jumps up to 15% or 25% or 20% or whatever. Lots of people live in that situation where they're paying 15%, 20%, 25% interest on something where a lot of rational people are paying 4 or 5%. Why is that? What do they have? I'll tell you what they have in common. They are all have this in common, I would venture to say. They are undisciplined. In a lot of areas of their life, they are undisciplined. You remember a few years ago, they made it against the law in Arkansas to have, what do they call those things, payday lenders? All right, I don't know how it worked, but you need some money by this weekend, you go in, they'll give you $200. And it's the same deal. You're going to pay them back $250 or whatever. An exorbitant amount of fees. They didn't call it interest. They called it fees. All right, this can be theft. If you take advantage of someone's situation, it can be theft. You can be breaking the spirit of this law. Now, I understand. Sometimes there's an agreement made between two parties, and maybe we need to consider that. But same way. Inflation. I've got to hurry. Inflation. Is inflation theft? It takes your money. It diminishes its value. And if the government is the person behind this inflation, the government is stealing from you. Next page, eminent domain. Is eminent domain theft? It is if it's my land. All right? I don't have the answer for this. If there was no eminent domain laws, this highway probably wouldn't be here. You'd probably take you a long time to get from A to Z, no matter where it was, because you're crossing somebody's property. They don't want you on their property. Probably like mine. All right? So I don't know the answer for that. But this has been haggled in courts for 100 or 200 years. And the courts of our land make this statement that the state has, even though you may own your land, the state has sovereignty over all the land within the United States, let's say Arkansas, whatever. I don't like that. In reality, God has sovereignty over all of the land on the earth. The earth is the Lord's. And if God wants to take someone's land and give it to someone else, he can do it. Prison. We're going to talk about this a little bit further down here. But when someone is in prison for a crime, they're taking my money to keep them. And from the figures I've heard, it takes a lot more to keep them than it takes me to live on. Unequipped youth and rebellious teens. If we don't train our children to be disciplined in their life, if we don't train them and teach them how to work, a vocation, you are stealing from them, because they will end up at 20 or 21 years old working for minimum wage at McDonald's. Teach them a trade so that when they get grown, they can initially get a decent job. at least a better job than they would have. It's a rude awakening sometimes for kids when they get 18 or 19 years old to figure out everybody ain't playing video games. Somebody's paying the electric bill around here. Rebellious teen. If you're a teenager and you're rebellious, I'll tell you what you're stealing. You're stealing your parents' time. You're stealing your parents' resources. You're stealing your parents' money. Equal weights and measures. Could be our money. Could be things that we barter, whatever the case may be. Fair wages. Most of the time, you get what you pay for. I don't think it's none of, if I had people working for me and this guy here is making $12 an hour and this guy here is making $20 an hour and they're doing the same job, I don't think it's any one of either one of them's business what the other one's making. I don't care. It's my business to pay them what we agree on. If I agree to this guy to pay him $12 an hour, and I'd agree to this guy to pay him $20 for the exact same job, it's none of anybody's business what my agreement is. It's not any of the government's business what I pay. It's what we agree on. I'm not saying that makes for good working relationships between these two guys, but still, it's a fair arrangement. It's a just arrangement because it is agreed upon. However, if I pay some guy minimum wage, you know what I'm typically going to get? Minimum wage quality. Because the guy who is skilled, it won't be long till he'll find him a better paying job. So these things all kind of even themselves out eventually. There's been a number of times over the last 30 or 40 years where someone talked to me about a job and then they ended up getting some yahoo to do the work. And then I had to come in behind him and redo it. They paid me a lot more money than they would have paid this guy. And that's why they got him to start with. I saw a video not long ago of some company, big company, that had 90-something employees. I can't remember exactly who it was. But for a Christmas bonus, this guy gave his employees a Christmas bonus. And you were watching a video of the party, and man, there were some happy folks. I mean, they were really excited and happy about their bonus. They were talking about this. He had 90-something employees. He did not give them an equal bonus. It depended on how long you were there. If somebody had been there 6 months, they're not going to get the same amount of bonus as someone had been there for 30 years. But here's this benevolence given by this guy. And they finally told you the average bonus that this guy gave out was over $50,000. I knew then why they were happy. Yeah? There's a business in town that's, the guy's retired now. But for years, every year, I think at Christmas time, he gave his employees $100 for every year they had been with him. Some of those guys have been there 20, 30 years. $2,000 or $3,000 bonus at Christmas time back in the mid-70s, 80s was a nice chunk of change. You know, for some reason, that guy didn't have much turnover. Wonder why that is. How should theft be dealt with? Three basic means found in the Old Testament. This is interesting. Three basic means for dealing with theft. One is capital punishment. There are some things, some situations, sometimes we'll see a little later on where someone could be put to death for theft. Number two, restitution. And the restitution is a multiple of the value of something that is stolen. It may be two times, maybe four times, maybe seven times. We'll see those as come along. But if I steal $1,000 from Mike Bertolotte, and the only thing I've got to do is give him his $1,000 back, that might be worth the risk, right? If I've got to pay him back $4,000, if I'm caught, I'll think twice about it. Okay, well, if I can't pay him back, then the third part is servitude. I'm become an indentured servant to Mike until my debt is paid to him. Now, that doesn't mean I go work in his yard, mow his yard. In fact, if somebody stole from me, I wouldn't want him in my yard, right? You go work somewhere else, I'll come pick up your check every Friday. That's how that works. But in the scriptures, I don't think, and you all pay, try to remember this, try to pay attention to this. I don't think you're ever going to find, in the Old Testament law, as we go through the rest of Exodus, where people were imprisoned for a crime. They were detained temporarily till their case was tried. But I don't know of any requirement for the punishment of a crime to be put someone in prison. That's a new thing. In fact, it's not really new, but it's a lot newer than the Old Testament law. What is the alternative to stealing? Legitimate work. Work to get your stuff. Contentment. If you're content, you don't have to work to get your stuff because you don't want your stuff. Godly character and a desire to please God. These are alternatives to stealing and taking things that are not yours. Is that it? Is that the end of this commandment? No, it's not. We've talked about this back on kill. Thou shalt not kill as well. But we've got to be positive. We've got to be proactive, probably is a better word, in not just refraining from stealing, but doing something. Now, there's a verse in Ephesians that I want to quote for you that wraps all this up in one verse. Ephesians 4:28. Listen to it. Let him that stole steal no more. But, the word but indicates to you, probably fix see something that's contrasted one with the other. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands that which is good, that he may have to give to him who needs it. Do you see how that is a totally different mindset from someone who is wanting something for nothing? Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him who needs it. Do you want to better your lot in life? I do. Do you want to better yourself? I do. Why? Why do you want better things? Why do you want different things? Do you want a $100,000 car to get you from your house to church? Do you want $100,000 to impress your relatives or your friends? Do you want a big house? Do you want lots of stuff, expensive stuff? Just for whatever reason it is, why do you want what you want? Do you want it so you can consume it upon your own desires because I enjoy this or I enjoy that? Or like this verse says, do we want things in order that we may, after our needs are met, we may have more to advance God's kingdom, to share the love of Christ to the world? You ever thought, asked this question to yourself? If I were a multi-millionaire, but that gets you very far nowadays. If I had $1 billion, what would I do with it? No. You know, I have never considered a question like that, but what the first things that start spinning through my mind are 1,000 acres in the middle of nowhere. 25 AR-15s or something, you know, big four-wheel drive truck. First thing to start rotating through my mind are things. I have to go through a lot of pages before I come to giving money to Answers in Genesis, giving money to this, giving money to that. That's a good indication of what's in my heart, isn't it? Let's pray. Father, would you take your word, not just the things I have said. Lord, you know, these people know, that I'm prone to err, prone to say things that aren't wise or right. Father, would you take your word and your Holy Spirit pierce our hearts deeply with it. And God, let us see ourselves as we really are, not as we have imagined ourselves to be. Amen.